Good evening and welcome. Let's begin with two songs.
Oh.
for the sake of time this evening, we will go straight to our prayer time.
Good evening. As Danny mentioned, this evening I was asked to share about my time in Asia, specifically in Thailand, with the Institute for Global Opportunities. And the committee wasn't quite sure what all to ask me to talk about tonight, so with a little bit of thought, I decided to split the evening into three parts. In the first part, I'll talk a little bit about what IGO is all about and give a brief overview, and then open it up for any questions that you have about it. And then I'd like to share some about my personal journey, a bit of my testimony, and what God's been doing in my heart. And I'd like to finish by showing some pictures, especially from several of the ministry trips that I was on, and hopefully give you a little bit of an idea of what some of it was like. So I'll begin by talking a little bit about the Institute. I'm assuming that most of you have heard of it and probably know a little bit about what it's about. So I'm going to try to give a brief overview and then open it up for questions so that I can tell you what you want to hear and not what you don't want to hear. As I said, IGO stands for the Institute for Global Opportunities and is located in northern Thailand. Thailand is right in the middle of southern Asia and is directly south of China and a little bit east of Bangladesh and India. So you can make a mental note of where that's at. IGO attempts to bring ministry and learning together by alternating terms of several weeks of classroom study with a week and a half of ministry on the field in Asia and then back in the classroom. So by that alternation, it hopes to give students the opportunity to put what they learn about missions and about, well, God and themselves and everything else to practice with hands-on ministry. The vision of IGO is to provide American students with both the vision and the tools for ministry by providing the opportunity to study outside of their own culture, as well as the opportunity to travel and minister in Asia, as I said. IGO is a fairly young organization, and it's still growing, and so they're developing various ministries and such like, especially in Chiang Mai. In the back, you will find a brochure labeled Institute for Global Opportunities Ministries. So if you're interested in seeing what else IGO is up to besides just the training institute, this would be a good brochure to pick up. I may as well introduce the rest of the brochures I have as well. This one is called the IGO Vision and is just a bit more of a general look at IGO's vision and what it's about. I've got a stack of these as well. Help yourself. This is the IGO newsletter, and I think everyone gets it in their mailbox. So you've probably seen this already. If for some reason you want the most recent copy, help yourself. There's still some extras in the back. And finally, if you're interested in attending IGO, this is the 2010 course catalog, and I have a stack of these back there. So if anyone is interested, help yourselves. And if for some reason they run out or you don't see the stacks, or several weeks from now you decide you want something, just talk to me and I'll try to get it to you. IGO, the Institute, operates from about April through middle of December, and that is split into two semesters. So the minimum amount of time to attend is one semester, which is about 4 months long, and each semester is split into three terms for a total of six terms per year. And each term consists of 3 weeks of study in the classroom and then a ministry trip in Asia for a week and a half. During the term, which is during the study part of the term, the 3 weeks, there's four classes per day, and they're an hour each, and about an hour of homework for each one. So it's a pretty full schedule and lots of hard work, but really worthwhile. I really enjoyed the studies there. Also, I might mention that during our time at the Institute, each Monday and Friday night is ministry night, And each of the students is involved in a specific ministry in Chiang Mai. And there's a whole bunch of different ministries this year. I might just mention what ministry I was involved in. Most of you are probably familiar with Kara Ministries, which is what Razine is helping with, taking care of Thai babies whose mothers can't take care of them or whose families have rejected them or need help. And each Monday and Friday night, I and several other students had the opportunity to babysit these children so that the nannies could have an evening off. And I thoroughly enjoyed that part of the ministry. I'll have some pictures of that a little bit later. I'm not sure what else to say. I could go on and on all evening, so I think I'll open it up for questions at this point. How would you like for me to better explain it, or what questions do you have about it?
What did you specifically focus on in your classes?
Good question. What did you specifically focus on in your classes? I've told people the classes are a lot like a normal Bible school, studying Bible books of the Bible, doctrine, different things like that, Christian family living. But then it also has a special focus on missions and ministry-related, maybe cross-cultural outreach and that sort of thing. Also, I discovered personally that even just studying classes that I would study at any other Bible school here at home took on a new impact when I was studying it outside of my own culture. Say, for instance, I'm studying Christ's teachings on how to use my finances, and I've just been in India and had a poor little starving boy sitting on my lap. It makes it more real, makes me realize that there are real people with real needs, and it needs to impact the way I use my finances. Just one example of the impact that it can have to study in another culture like that. Laverne.
So would you mind just saying what courses you took?
All right. Well, I was there for 6 terms, so I took 24 of them. also, on that note, all of the students take all of the same courses. And so there's not a choosing of which course to take. It's all together. And once again, if you're interested, that would be in the course catalog. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what else to say on that.
No,
did you? Okay, sure thing. Yeah. No. Yes. I may as well explain second year program. They also have an opportunity to come back for a second year in which a student would take 3 weeks of classes, the first term just like usual, but then for the rest of the semester, about 3 months, they spend in an internship somewhere in Asia rather than coming back to the institute each time. And they also have a different set of classes for second year students, so they aren't repeating what they did the year before. David.
Are there several teachers?
There are about three main teachers that teach most terms and several other staff that are involved with other ministry. They're living in Chiang Mai, and they might teach several classes. And then most terms, they invite visiting teachers to come over and teach. I think Paul Miller has taught from this community, possibly others that I'm not thinking of. Valuator is the administrator, yes. Paul first, and then John.
And the size of the student body?
All right. Varies greatly. The first semester that I was there had 12 students, and the second semester was the most they've ever had with 30 students. And John.
Did you go over with any beliefs or biases that were like significantly impacted in your time there, your study, your training?
Trying to think how to answer that specifically. I would say yes. not as much strong beliefs as I think my time there opened my eyes and increased my vision. I think especially of my perspective of other ethnicities. I became much more than just an American thinker, and I began to think more globally than I did before. Lots of other little things that I'm having a hard time putting my finger on. Yeah. Tim.
What mission trip highlights would you remember especially, or what did your mission trips involve?
Good question. Mission trips are vastly diverse. They all vary from each other. And some of them include a lot of them include connecting with a missionary that's already in the country, working with them, seeing what they do, and finding ways to minister with them. Often we were fairly limited in the actual personal ministry we could do because of language barriers. Sometimes we went into a country with no contact there, and we had a general route of where we were going to try to go by bus or train or whatever else, and a map and a phrase book was pretty much the extent of our tools. So they varied a lot. You asked what were some of the highlights. I'll get to some of that with some of my pictures, but one that stands out was prayer walking. And I'll explain, a number of you may be familiar with prayer walking. That is when you walk through a town maybe or an area and you're in small groups and you're praying out loud for the community you're walking through, for the houses and the people, and you're praying that God's Spirit would be present and work in their lives. We did get to do that in several villages, I think especially of China. We went into some villages where we don't know whether there's ever Christians there before or not, but some of the missionaries were hoping to start outreach there, and so they wanted us to walk through and pray for the villages before they went. Missionaries have testified that there's a significant difference in the openness of people when they start a work where there's already been people prayer walking versus a brand new area. That was just one of the highlights that stands out.
How receptive were the people?
I would say overall very receptive to, or very open to talking, but not necessarily open to joining your beliefs or to the gospel. As I said, we were pretty limited in the amount of personal interaction we were able to have. But we ran into very little hostility or opposition to it. Alright, I think I'm going to move on, and I'll probably open it up for some more questions later on as they come up. The next section I'd like to share about is some of the journey God's been taking me on in the last year, and I don't have time to share everything, and you certainly aren't interested in hearing everything, but I would like to pick out several of the highlights, some of the milestones, some of the significant lessons that God taught me, and I think I have about 5 milestones listed, and just share some of that. Obviously, some of this is fairly personal, but I hope it can bless you and inspire you to seek God. My testimony is certainly with the Apostle Paul's. It's not that I have already obtained all this or have already been made perfect, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. So the things that I'm sharing as things that God taught me are really things that God is still teaching me and will continue to do that. And I hope it's a blessing to you. I'd like to go back, first of all, about 2 years ago. to the spring of 2008, I knew for about a year before I was going to IGO that I was planning to go. So in the spring of 2008, I began to think about the fact that I have 1 year left before I go to Asia, and I began to pray that God would prepare my heart for what he had in mind for me there. And I knew this was a pretty big opportunity, and I didn't want to waste it. So I was praying that God would bring whatever he wanted to prepare me to maximize my experience in Asia. Well, most of 2008 was a pretty difficult year for me, pretty dry spiritually, and it didn't seem like God was answering my prayer very well. Until right towards the end of the year, about December and January, God really started speaking to me about the need to surrender to his lordship, just give everything to him. And basically what it boiled down to was that I was still sitting on the throne of my heart. Although I was trying to serve God, I was in control of what I gave him and what I didn't. And it took me a little while to understand what God was trying to teach me about surrender, what he meant. And as I wrestled with it, I finally came to the place where I told God that that I was willing to submit to him, willing to surrender to him, if he would be willing to show me each step of the way what it was that he was requiring of me and where he wanted to take me. And I had the sense that I was beginning a journey that was more than just a one-time decision, but would be a journey of discovery and a journey of continued surrender that would last for quite some while and ultimately for the rest of my life. Obviously, God was faithful on his end of but in the next several months after that point, he continued to teach me, continued to show me, continued to bring things into my life to show me what it was that he was requiring of me and what he meant by total surrender to him, including the first several months at IGO, some of the classes and different interactions that I had just clearly pointed to God's call for total surrender and to death to myself, my own desires, and to live completely for him. The next lesson is so closely tied to the first one, it really doesn't deserve to be separated. The next thing that God started to teach me was that all of life is for his glory. Not for my glory, not for anyone else's, it's for his glory. As long as I was on the throne of my heart, I was living to make myself look good. And God wanted me to start living to make him look good. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, "Whether therefore ye eat or drink, or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God." Matthew 5, verse 16 says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." God wants us as Christians to shine our lights so that he gets glory, not ourselves. I also have a quote here by John Piper. I know it's been shared in this church before, so I suspect it's going to be familiar to some of you. He says, "Missions is not the ultimate goal of the church. Worship is. Missions exist because worship doesn't. Worship is ultimate, not missions, because God is ultimate, not man. When this age is over and the countless millions of the redeemed fall on their faces before the throne of God, missions will be no more. It is a temporary necessity, but worship abides forever." We were created for worship. We were created to glorify God. So often I tend to make life all about myself. I think the world revolves around me. I read the Bible. I live life to find happiness and satisfaction for myself. I read the Bible to see what it has to say to me. Even Christianity becomes a religion that centers around saving people from hellfire rather than centering around the glory of an awesome God. And God began to teach me that really I need to focus on him and make my life revolve around him and making him look good, glorifying his name and not myself. When we get this straight and begin living for God's glory instead of our own, it puts a whole new purpose and meaning into our lives. I'd also like to quote one of my teachers at IGO, who said, "With this God-centered focus, we are free to see our ministry as a means towards God's ultimate purpose, rather than an end in itself." God's ultimate purpose of receiving glory to himself. When we focus on giving him glory, then our ministry can become a part of a bigger plan and not just spin its wheels on its own. The next milestone that I'd like to share about is how God began to show me his heart for the world and his heart for other nations, or for all the nations, and for each person. Especially during first semester, a lot of the classes really woke me up to how much God cares that the entire world knows about him. As I said, God is in the business of bringing himself great glory. And I believe one of the greatest ways that he does that is by making himself known throughout the entire world. Way back in Genesis, God talked to Abraham, and he made a covenant with him. And he said, "Abraham, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse them that curse thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed." God was promising that through Abraham and through his descendants, he would bless all the families on the earth. In Matthew 24:14, God made another promise that essentially repeated the promise that he'd made to Abraham. He says, "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." God makes a very clear promise in this verse that his name is going to be known in every nation and in every people group before the end of the world. In Revelation, we see the result, the end result of this promise that God made. Revelation chapter 7, verses 9 and 10. "After this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations, and kindreds, and peoples, and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands, and cried with a loud voice, saying, Salvation to our God, which sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb." God has promised that he's going to make his name known in every nation of the world. And he's going to accomplish that. And I began to see just how faithful he's going to be in accomplishing that goal. The question is not whether the goal is going to be accomplished. The question is simply whether I'm going to choose to be a part of that, of accomplishing it, and allowing God to involve me. Lesson 4, once again, ties closer to the one before it. God began to show me that I am blessed to be a blessing. Looking again quickly at the promise that he made to Abraham, we see that he says, "I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." Abraham was not just blessed for his own sake. He was blessed so that he could be a blessing to other people, to other nations. Blessings are often followed by responsibilities. As you read through these scriptures, you'll see that often this pattern follows. Whenever there's a blessing, there's a responsibility that goes with that blessing. And I'd like to read one of those passages tonight. Turn to Psalm 67. Psalm 67. Where there's a blessing, there's a responsibility to use that blessing. "God be merciful unto us, and bless us, and cause his face to shine upon us, that thy way may be known upon earth, thy saving health among all nations. Let the people praise thee, O God. Let all the people praise thee. O let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for thou shalt judge the people righteously and govern the nations upon earth. Let the people praise thee, O God. Let all the people praise thee. Then shall the earth yield her increase, and God, even our own God, shall bless us. God shall bless us, and all the ends of the earth shall fear him." God shall bless us, and all the ends of the earth shall fear him. There's a reason that we're blessed. It's so that we can spread the knowledge of God. The children of Israel tended to miss the responsibility that went with their blessing. They didn't miss the blessing. They knew that they were God's chosen people. But they seemed to forget the fact that they were intended by God to be a blessing to the nations around them. And in a very similar way, God has given us rich blessings. And one of the things that God just began to teach me was that I need to use those blessings responsibly for His kingdom, for the advancement of His kingdom, and to bless other people, and not just for myself. He began to show me the futility of living for things that are only temporal, and not living to build things that are eternal, to build His kingdom, to build into other people's lives, and that sort of thing. The last milestone that I'd like to share about was, or the last lesson is, God's faithfulness and His ability to take care of me and to take care of anything that comes up. Especially during my second semester at IGO, God really started to show me His ability to take care of any problem and any situation. Especially on the ministry trips where things sometimes got out of control, out of our control, and we weren't quite sure what was going to happen next. God just showed that He can take care of anything. Looking at the Great Commission, I thought I had that text here. I'll look it up quickly. Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through the end. And Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Notice that right in this command that Jesus gives is sandwiched between two amazing promises. He begins by saying, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Therefore, go and make disciples. And then he ends it by saying, Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. And God just began to show me that no matter what He calls me to, no matter what I'm facing, He's big enough to take care of it. And I can trust Him with that. As a result, I grew a lot in being able to trust God and just being able to give everything to Him, whether it be small circumstances that come up throughout the day, or whether it be big things like the future and unknowns. Also through that, God taught me to pray more effectively or pray more fervently that he would intervene for needs and for people. Because I trusted God, I knew that He had proven that He would come through for me. I was able to pray more fervently and with more faith that he would hear and answer. As I said at the beginning, these are lessons that God has been teaching me and is still teaching me, and I hope I can continue to be faithful to growing in whatever God has for me. I am extremely thankful for the opportunity He gave me to go to Asia and the experiences I had there and the lessons He taught me. And I'm thankful to you as a church for your prayers and your support while I was gone. It meant a lot to know that I had a church that was supporting me in what I was pursuing. I also want to especially recognize my family, who is here tonight, for their prayers and their support, for standing behind me while I was gone. I think I'll open it up again. Maybe you have comments or something you'd like to say. What would any other questions about IGO or comments on what I shared? All right. At this time, I'll get ready to show the pictures. And I have, as I said, I have some pictures from ministry nights, the Monday and Friday nights during the study part of the term, in which we got to take care of the children. And I also have pictures from two of my ministry trips. As I said, the ministry trips are quite diverse, and I tried to pick two of them that are quite diverse from each other. So the one is about my trip to Laos, and the second is about my trip to Turkey. Maybe we could have several verses of song while I get set up, and if you boys want to rearrange, or anyone that needs to rearrange to see the pictures, you're welcome to do that. Good question. I went on six. There's one per term, so I was on six of them. All right, this is the group of students that we had first semester. As I said, there's 12 students, and also our deans are in the mix there. And perhaps my computer will freeze up. Okay. And this is the second semester crew. Notice on the right is Craig and Rachel. They were second-year students. This picture includes, I think, six second-year students. So they joined for the first 3 weeks of the semester. Next, as I said, is ministry nights, which, as I said, Monday and Friday nights, several of us got to babysit the nanny's children so that the nannies could have an evening to themselves. I thoroughly enjoyed the opportunity to hang out with the children. We usually fed them supper and went for a walk to the park. Pretty typical children. Hungry, scared, playful, sad, happy, silly, peaceful, trusting, and always cuter and all get out. This is Razine and the two little boys that she had for several months. The one on the right, the smaller one, is the one that she recently had to give back to his mother, and was replaced by a little 5-pound girl. So she's learning to love her quite a bit, I think. Next, I'd like to talk about my trip to Laos. We did not have contacts to meet with when we went into Laos. We were basically given a map and a phrase book, as I said, and given a basic idea of where we were supposed to go. Our goal was to stay in a village of a particular people group. I don't remember which people group. And pray while we were there and stay there for as long as we could, or for several days. And we found out later that we did not meet our goal. We did not find the people group we were aiming for, but we did have quite a bit of adventure on the way. Here's the team that went. Laos is a beautiful country. We spent quite a few hours on buses heading down into Laos. And then we took a 3-hour ride in a tuk-tuk. And then we got even more adventuresome with our transportation. We showed the people at the bus station where we wanted to go on the map, and they looked at us like we were silly and told us it would take 10 hours to get there. So we settled for something that looked quite a bit closer, and they said it would take 3 hours and that it was 30 kilometers. They also explained that we would need to rent a large truck to get there. We found out they weren't joking as we bumped back across the roads and bridges, etc. It was 30 kilometers, and it took nearly 3 hours to get back there. When we got to the village, we were not able to communicate terribly well. There was one lady that had limited Thai and one person on our team that had a little bit of Thai, and we communicated that we wanted to stay there. They weren't quite sure why. We did not find the people to be particularly hospitable. We were not offered food at all for the 3 days that we stayed there, but we did have some snacks and such along. And they did very generously give us a house to stay in. This house was under construction, and so we stayed up on the second floor, the part that you can see here. And we had a good view of all around us, as they did of us. We stayed there for 3 nights and 2 days. There was also a river that right beside the village that seemed to be kind of the hub of life there. They did their bathing and washing, etc. there. Also had a nice, exciting bamboo bridge across it. We did finally get the children to warm up to us. Like I said, most of the people weren't tremendously open, but after several days of hanging out with the children, they did start to warm up to us, and we had some fun times. We did find that the river was their place of play during the afternoon, so we spent a number of hours swimming with them. This is the school and the hospital, both of them in the village, evidence of some government funding helping out there. While I'm in Laos, I might just mention, we stayed there for several days and then found our way back out. Well, the truck driver stayed there at the village as well and then took us out several days later. And then we traveled to the northern part of the country and did meet with a missionary couple there and were able to connect with them for a little bit and shared some about our experiences and learned some about their ministry there. Next trip I'd like to share about is Turkey. This was a very exciting trip. One of the things that made it unique from a lot of the trips is that there was enough English speakers that we were able to focus on personal evangelism and witnessing to the people we came into contact with, which is unique from most of the ministry trips we go on. Most of the time we're limited by language. Chris Stolzfus from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the one on the top left, came over and led our team, and we learned an amazing amount from him. He has had quite a bit of experience in Muslim evangelism, and that was the focus of our time in Turkey. We did a fair amount of touring, but used that as a platform to meet people and to share Christ with them. We especially tried to encourage Muslims to read the Bible and to see what it says, because we were limited in what we were able to share with them, but if we could improve their view of the Bible, then they were able to open a wealth of understanding to themselves. Turkey first of all, we went to Istanbul, and the city of Istanbul has extremes of modern and ancient altogether. It's a beautiful city. It spans Europe and Asia, and has ferries running between the two, so we got to ride the ferries a fair amount. Also in the distant background you can see a bridge. I believe that is the bridge that goes from Europe to Asia. The spires that you see are on mosques. Muslim mosques, a very, very common sight in Turkey. Here's a closer view. This is a missionary family that is working in Istanbul. They are pretty much by themselves, and they are praying for another family to come join them. So we spent the first half of our trip in Istanbul doing some touring, but our primary focus was to bless them in their ministry and be an encouragement to them. And then the second half of the trip, we left Istanbul and went down to Cappadocia, but I guess that comes a little bit later. We had a lot of fun with their children. There was one night we got to babysit their children so that the parents could go out on a date. I think it was the first time they got to do that in 2 years. This picture is significant to me. This is Karim. He is a Muslim background. I met him at church on Sunday, and his family has rejected him and beaten him for his faith. His wife also rejected and left him, along with his 8-month-old daughter. I've heard plenty of stories of people who experienced that kind of suffering for the name of Christ, but this was the first time I came face to face with someone, and it became more real to me to realize that there are lots and lots of people who suffer for their beliefs. One of the significant things for me on the trip was the morning's time of prayer. We spent about an hour in prayer each morning before we set out. Those became very special times of connecting and as a team, and also gaining strength from God and seeking His direction. Here's some shots of Chris reaching out. He was incredible, the way he could just strike up a conversation with anyone. we were no longer in the outback of Laos, and we found that Starbucks was a great place to hang out as a team and also to meet people. One day our team was given the day to ourselves to explore Istanbul, and we were sent out on our own. Chris didn't even go with us, and we were specifically looking for some Jewish synagogues that were listed on the map. We found one synagogue, but it was closed. Meanwhile, we ran into a number of other adventures, including a Muslim wedding, and they invited us to come in for the ceremony, which we did. So that was fascinating. When you're in a strange city, a map is always a nice thing to have along. Now, sometimes you might think you're on the wrong street. In a really bad scenario, you might even be in a different city than you think. In this case, we were in a different continent than we thought. Of course, the women are always a great encouragement. The second half of our trip, we went to Cappadocia, which is listed several times in the Bible. It's in the middle of Asia Minor, and once had a lot of Christians. It is now pretty desolate and bare besides the tourism, and it just, yeah, the glory of God isn't openly displayed there the way it once was. It is famous for its caves. I don't know how well you can, there you can see them. All throughout the countryside, there's lots and lots of caves dug in the soft rock. Many of these were churches or homes where Christians lived, sometimes hid from their enemies. As I said, the focus of our time was to connect with people and share Christ with them. And this was one of the most significant contacts we had. This is Randall and Rehan. She is from Malaysia, and he grew up Muslim. He grew up Southern Baptist in Georgia and became a Muslim when he met her. As you can imagine, his beliefs aren't quite as hardcore as most Muslims are. We had an amazing time connecting with them and sharing with them. The next several pictures are of our interactions with them. And towards the end of our time with them, I could really sense that Randall was thinking hard and was really processing some of the decisions he'd made. And we could tell that the Spirit was working in his heart. So we still pray for them. We don't really have contact with them, so there's no way of knowing what all God's doing in their lives but now. But that was exciting. That's all I've got for pictures. Appreciate your interest. And we can have the lights again. Not a lot of function besides tourism. I think there would be some that are still used. We did, the hotel that we stayed in was built into a cave. Some of them are holes in the rock. Others, especially the churches, still have frescoes, paintings, and stuff in varying states of disrepair, and we got to see a number of those. But there's not a lot of them are in functional use at this point. Joel. Okay. I think it's $3,700 per semester. And I think that covers part of the cost, and churches cover the rest. And that covers both your study and your travel, excluding travel over and back. Paul. Yes. I went to India, and some of you would know the name Sam and Becca Gunty. They're in Hyderabad, India. We got to connect with them. My second trip, we stayed in Thailand, but visited some of the Karen tribes with a Thai pastor. Also got to go to Vietnam, and then Laos, which I showed, and then Turkey and China, the last trip. Perry. Did you connect with Mennonite missionaries in Turkey? the picture I showed of the family there, I believe maybe, I'm not even quite sure. They're obviously conservative, not Mennonite necessarily, but I'm not quite sure what their affiliation is. Paul. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry? I don't know for sure, no. It's. I think Turkey was one of the easiest countries I went into. It's extremely easy to get in, but I don't know what it's like to stay in. David. Yes. Yes. Jeremy and Charlene. Sitkowski. Jeremy Sitkowski. I don't remember for sure. He told us that there was another family that was felt called to go to Turkey, and so he was chatting with him sometime. This was before they went, and he asked him, well, they ended up going somewhere else, and he asked him why they were going somewhere else, and he said, well, there's no one in Turkey that they could work with. He said, well, then I'd better get over there so that you can come join me. So as I said, they're by themselves and feeling it, but they are praying hard that another family will come and join them. John.
Was there any time you or your group felt like you might not be too popular for being Christians?
There were times that we didn't say very openly that we were, especially where legal matters, China, Vietnam, et cetera, we were tourists. But in Turkey, as I said, we shared personally. There were times that we may have been casually turned down. There was one time that Chris, he was talking to our hotel owner or manager, and he was a really friendly guy. We'd gotten to like him, and so towards the end of our time there, Chris was trying to witness to him, and he became pretty heated in telling him that he had no interest in the Bible. And that was probably it was nothing threatening besides some heated words, but that was the most significant that I remember. Yeah, didn't kick us out of his hotel.
When you were showing pictures of Laos, a number of years ago, this church sponsored a family that came from Laos, and they told us how they were during the communist reign, and they had to walk during the night with flashlights, and they had two children with them. One went to Thailand, and then the World Service brought them over here.
That's interesting. What were their names? Okay. Yes, lots. That was amazing. We taught English in schools during the morning. I'm sorry, I should repeat his question before I go too far with this. He was asking when we were among the Karen in northern Thailand whether we were able to go to church services with them. And we were, and they know how to worship. And we thoroughly enjoyed our worship services with them. We went to worship service with them most evenings. And the Thai pastor that was with us would preach. Usually it had to be interpreted into Karen. And we would give our introductions and sometimes testimonies. She got interpreted from English to Thai and then from Thai to Karen. So it was, yeah, we really, really enjoyed that part of the trip. And on other trips as well, cross-cultural worship services became one of the highlights for us.
Did you have a chance to sing in the
churches? Yeah, we did. we sang most evenings, sing several songs for them. Also significantly in Turkey, as we were touring in Cappadocia, we got to sing in several of the churches, the cave churches, which was kind of amazing, a miracle really, because it's not the type of thing that most tour guides would be really excited about. Our tour guide was definitely Muslim, but he had some pretty scandalous ideas for a Muslim, and knowledge about Christianity that just blew us away. How could he know that much and not be a Christian? And so he was really gracious and allowed us to sing in some of those, which was pretty exciting. Joel. I'm sorry, let me clarify, with Asian missionaries? Uh-huh. As I mentioned, there's a Thai pastor there in Chiang Mai who does an awful lot of help for the Institute. Not only, he teaches culture and language and some of that at the Institute, but also does a lot of their legal work for them and that sort of thing. And he leads several teams each year. And I was privileged to go with him. He's a very dynamic man. Maybe some other Thai ministries in Chiang Mai as well. I'm not thinking. Now another one pops to mind. In Vietnam, there is a Vietnamese Christian there. Very bold, very forthright with his faith. And very evangelistic, and we got to meet him and connect with him a little bit. Those are the main ones that come to mind. Pastor Giet. And the one in Vietnam is Sang Din. Yes. Of course, thank you. Yes, we did. It was, I'm thinking of the mixture of ethnicities there. Obviously, we represented Americans. There was also, other than that, I think it was about half and half Turkish and Korean. There was a number of Korean Christians there in Istanbul. Well, thank you for your interest. I've enjoyed sharing this evening, and I hope it's been enjoyable for you as well. If you have more questions, feel free to peg me afterwards, and I'd be happy to talk about it more. Connor, do you have a verse of song prepared?